This is Lake Effect from 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR. Thanks for tuning in today. I'm Joy Powers. For many, work is already pretty stressful. But during the coronavirus pandemic, whether you're still employed or not, the stress has multiplied. Our first guest believes this pandemic has revealed some of the harmful aspects of work-life balance that have been around for years. For example, why does our isolated at-home social life feel so much like work? Celeste Headley is a familiar name to public radio listeners. She's the host of many podcasts and shows, and she's written two books on preventing burnout and building meaningful social connections. Her latest book is called Do Nothing: How to Break Away from Overworking, Overdoing, and Underliving. She speaks with Lake Effect's Julian Haida.
For the most part, authentic social interactions don't have to be with someone you care about. For example, they have shown that even a 10-minute conversation with a complete stranger can increase your cognitive performance on a whole variety of different tests. Just having any kind of authentic interaction will help you. When I say authentic, I mean you need to hear a human voice. So it doesn't have to be over Zoom. A teleconference is great, but if you're Zoomed out, call somebody on the phone. You need to hear that human voice. That is what we respond to. It's what we are biologically and evolutionarily primed to respond to. But your interactions with your coworkers, your relationship with coworkers, rarely fulfill the human need for belonging. Belonging is the number one need that we all have after survival. Number one need. Freud was wrong. And it is true that it's not common for that belonging need to be filled by a relationship at work.
Yeah, it seems kind of, it's a different kind of social interaction. It's a more formal social interaction. Now, a lot of us are having those interactions throughout the days, at least those of us who are fortunate to work from home, or even not, where we're, we might be staring at a computer screen. We might be sending emails. And then after the workday ends, a lot of us still want to find that social interaction. Or even though we've spent the day interacting with our colleagues, we still want that meaningful conversation in our lives. And a ton of people are organizing Zoom calls, virtual happy hours. This is a time for Passover and Easter, so there's a lot of, and Ramadan is coming up, so there's a lot of prayer services happening virtually, but it's still the same screen time. So what are the implications of having social gatherings on the same platforms as we do our work throughout the day?
Well, you've really put your finger on the challenge of teleconferences, because it is true that when we look at the markers of our responses, right, the way we respond to interaction, a teleconference is almost as good as being in person. The thing that makes it a little dangerous is that you're doing it on, as you say, the exact same platform and usually the same machine that you use for work. And the other thing that kind of makes this dangerous is that many people are not setting aside a space in their home for work, meaning that not only are they having their social interactions in the same virtual space as their work, but they're literally taking their laptop all over the house, so it's in the literal same space as their work. So there's a few things you can do to sort of cut down on the bleeding between the two lives, which is, A, carve out a space. Set aside that space in your house that is your work area. Make that your cubicle. Because you don't want your brain associating every corner of the home with work. You need your brain to know that when I'm here, I'm working, and when I step away, I'm living. I'm just being.
As a radio guy, it's in my closet.
Yeah, exactly. Absolutely. Although I doubt that you're not doing your editing in the closet also, are you?
It depends. I try not to, but if I really need to focus, closet's for me.
And you know what? If that works, then the closet is your face, although obviously that's going to come out with lots of jokes about coming out of it. But, but choose your workspace and hold to it. If it makes it easier for you to do like we did when we were kids and we built forts, make a fort.
I've seen people use camping tents in their living rooms.
Absolutely. You need that boundary line between your work and your life, and that's important, not just for your emotional health, but for your physical health as well. You can very easily slip into burnout during this time when you're working from home, which I know seems odd to people because they're like, I'm not doing anything, I'm just sitting around all day. But you can very easily start burning out because you're literally not taking any time off from work. You have your work materials, your laptop and your cell phone in your hands at all times. You're working all over the house. So as far as your brain and body are concerned, they very well could believe you're working or on call all day long. And that's a dangerous state.
So it seems like I talked with an optometrist recently, and you know, he said it's a lot just about screens. So it sounds like you're saying it's not just about the screens. It's also just about the, you know, physical associations that you have with labor.
Yeah. And, you know, there's a reason why, you know, if you have problems with sleep, one of the bits of advice any sleep doctor is going to give you is do nothing in your bed but sleep, right? Because they want your brain to associate in bed with sleep. And that's it, so that your brain knows when I'm here, I go to sleep. It's the same thing with work. That's exactly what you're trying to do, is make sure that your brain is not associating every part of your life now with work. Your brain needs to rest. It needs rest. And if it is in work mode, it's not resting. It's even if it's not actively doing a task, it is sitting there preparing for a notification to be come in. It's still on alert, right? So it never actually relaxes and sort of lets go.
Now, I'm curious. I think before this pandemic, a lot of people considered working from home as a bit of a privilege. And I want to get your thoughts on this. Do you think that that might flip? I mean, I think a lot of people are very happy to work in their offices away from home now. Do you imagine a world in the near future where having an office away from home where you can think about work and then home to be a place where you think of home with all the costs and expenses associated with having a brick and mortar office? Do you think that'll change? Do you think it'll be now a privilege to have an office?
It might. I don't know if I can predict whether that will actually change, but I'll tell you this. For example, we have a study that there are people that looked over the data and found that for women, say mothers, women who work in an office actually are less stressed. Their office space is a stress relief for them, whereas stay-at-home moms who are, believe me, working all day long are more stressed out than the women who are going into work. A lot of people are surprised by that because they assume that having to juggle the two things would lead to stress, but it's exactly what you're talking about, that having some kind of boundary between work and home life can be a huge relief to the brain. You know, another thing is that the stresses that come at work, to a certain extent, are manageable. Again, to a certain extent. For example, you somewhere in the back of your brain, you know you can walk away if you have to, right? If you leave your job, most of the friendships you made at that job don't really continue most of the time. So, like, there's a certain amount of impermanence and temporary nature to our jobs that also acts as a certain amount of stress relief. Again, I'm speaking in generalities. This isn't going to apply to every person in every situation. But it's part of the reason why having that office space can be very healthy for you.
Well, I'm also thinking of like a big work project. If you're working on something in your office and you leave for the day having made progress, there's a sense of accomplishment to that.
Oh, absolutely. Although you're also going to get the same sense of accomplishment if you make that kind of progress at home. But you most likely will get it done faster at work because you don't have all the distractions that you have in your home, right? I mean, you don't have kids. Even if you don't have kids, you don't have a pet. Even if you don't have a pet, you don't look up and realize that you haven't cleaned your kitchen in 4 weeks or what it may be. You're not responsible usually for the maintenance, cleaning, and all the other things going on in your office space, and you can ignore them.
I see. Very interesting and relatable. If you're just joining us, you're listening to Lake Effect on WUWM 89.7, Milwaukee's NPR. I'm Julian Haida, and with me is Celeste Headley. She's a speaker, author, musician, often public radio host. I think it's safe to say that her many hats make her an expert on burnout and how to avoid burnout, which is the subject of her latest book, Do Nothing, How to Break Away from Overworking, Overdoing, and Underliving. Now, I wanted to ask you a little bit about alternatives. Like, how can we prevent burnout, whether it be in work, which can be hard, but also with these after-hours social interaction that we are kind of, for lack of a better word, like forcing on ourselves to stay connected, but are also using our work platforms to do them?
Yeah, I really honor the effort people are making to make sure they have a social interaction every day. That is a good thing and also very healthy for you. We know that conversations, as long as they're not hostile, will bring down your heart rate, they'll lower your stress levels, et cetera. But you can find some limits, right? If you're not up for a Zoom call, like I said, make a phone call. If you're better off in a time of day, some people are more social first thing in the morning, right? So make your social interactions occur at a time when you still have some social energy left. And that's difficult right now because, unfortunately, people at work are scheduling more Zoom calls than they probably need to. If you only had one meeting per day in your regular job, then you shouldn't be having 5 Zoom meetings now. We do have a limited amount of social energy every day, and you do expend some of that social energy when you're doing the teleconferences. So just be aware of that and your own limitations. And the last thing I'd say is, like, a lot of times when people get 15 or 20 minutes off, like a break, the first thing they do is start to scan through their tablet or their cell phone especially. They'll check up on their email, they'll check up on Instagram, they'll check up on Facebook or whatever it may be, not realizing that, A, again, to your brain, you're still working, and B, in terms of your emotional well-being, those things depress emotional well-being for most people. They don't lift it. So it's not giving you a break. You think you're taking a break, but in fact, as far as your brain and body are concerned, you're working the entire time. So that may be why people are getting to the end of the day and feeling exhausted. It's because they haven't actually given themselves a break. So when you do get a break, and I hope you take one at least every hour, get up and walk away from your electronics. Yes, not just the screen, but the electronics completely. Put them out of your sight so your brain goes, oh, okay, we're on a break. Let's take a break now.
Yeah, and it's certainly a privilege for the kinds of people who need to keep up productivity. How much of that exhaustion that you mentioned that comes at the end of the day comes from keeping up appearances? I think a lot of people aren't used to working from home, and they want to make sure that they are filling their 40 hours. You know, there's a lot, I think, of people talking about, is this the end of the 40-hour week? Could it get longer?
Oh,
could
God,
it get
I
shorter? Well, I mean, it could get longer, right? We could, you know, eliminate the time spent on a commute and say, okay, you're working 45 hours a week now, as opposed to the, you know, experiments in Scandinavia or Japan with like a 6-hour work day or 4-day work week. Like, you know, do you think that we're learning something, or will we still need to, while working from home, look like we're doing 40 hours, even if we might even be doing more than 40 hours?
So we're not doing only, most people are not doing only 40 hours right now. I will say, though, that people are working less in general right now than they have been in decades before. And that surprises a lot of people because they feel like they're working more. The reason we feel like we're working more hours instead of less is, again, what I was saying before, that we're never actually giving ourselves a break. So even when you leave the office, people are still answering their work emails and still answering texts from their boss, et cetera, et cetera. And you're right, there are plenty of other countries that are experimenting and other companies that are experimenting with shutting down their email service completely when it's quitting time.
Wow.
Absolutely support so that emails don't come in, they don't get seen, you can't even cheat and look at it in the meantime. I totally support that. But yes, I really hope this means a shortening of work hours, because think about this for just a second. Imagine your bookkeeper in 1971, right? Taking care of the books, looking over everybody's finances, balancing accounts, etc. Now imagine that same bookkeeper today with, let's say he has the same number of clients. It takes so much less time to get his job done. It's not even close with all of the things that we have now.
But at the same time, he's not taking banker's boxes home every night like you can with an Excel spreadsheet.
Not only was that banker in 71 leaving the office and really leaving it there, but also why is he still working 40 hours? Why?
Yeah.
And that's obviously not his fault. It's because the system is set up to really severely penalize people if they try to cut their hours at all. I mean, consider how much you lose if you go part-time. You lose everything. You don't lose half your salary. You lose everything. So, yes, the system right now is set up to try to force people to work long hours, but it is very wrong-headed. And I spent 3 years of research and 70,000 words giving the evidence to show that it is wrong-headed, that not only is it less productive, but it's less profitable, and in the end, it's going to cost money because it's costing lives. It reduces people's immune system, I mean, weakens their immune system. It leads to burnout, which we're having an epidemic of right now. It leads to loneliness and social isolation, which we are also at epidemic levels, highest ever recorded. So there are major, major health effects, and those end up to corporations, it hurting the bottom line. But for me, it's more about, look, this isn't good for us. It's not making us happier or healthier. And in the United States, the life expectancy has fallen for 3 years in a row. And when they asked the doctor on the recent report, why are people dying earlier? He said, despair. So we have to, will things change? I really, really hope. But they have to change eventually. If not now, soon.
Well, I want to ask one last question, and I'd be remiss if I didn't ask it. How much do you think that commitment to 40 hours is a cart before the horse scenario? We expect blue-collar workers, for example, to work 40 hours, and 40 hours in a factory or some other blue-collar work, that amounts to a certain amount of output. And I've heard people say, well, it'd be unfair to the blue-collar workers if office workers work shorter hours. How do you see that translating to people who might not be the kinds of people like myself working from a home office right now?
So it used to be that the higher in rank you were and the more important of the job that you had, the fewer hours that you worked. And blue-collar workers and laborers were working the longest hours, but it has completely flipped on its head. The lower your salary and the lower your income, the fewer hours in general that you're working. So idleness is now a sign of low income. And the excessive hours are generally being worked by people at the higher income bracket.
I see. And it's because we're taking the tools of the trade home with us as opposed to something else like...
There's a bunch of different reasons for it. And if people are interested, you know, pick up the book, you know, to buy it. You can get it from a library, but pick it up, because I tried really carefully to sort of track all of these things and how these things changed so that we're now at a completely different vista. This is a landscape that our species has never seen before. This is a lifestyle our species has never lived before. We changed everything.
Well, it seems like it. And thanks so much for sharing your insights. And thanks so much for joining us on Lake Effect.
Okay, it's my pleasure.
Celeste Headley is the author of Do Nothing, How to Break Away from Overworking, Overdoing, and Underliving. She spoke with Lake Effect's Julian Haida. You're listening to Lake Effect on Milwaukee's NPR.